Hello and welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for the local site for baseball perspectives covering the White Sox in Chandler, Arizona. I am Matt Adams. Joining me today in lovely Elkhart, Indiana, James Fegan.
Hello.
And a special guest today joining us from Oak Park, Illinois, a Cleveland Indians expert, Jason Lukart.
Hey, glad to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. An extra thank you, actually, because you are joining us today. We're recording while the Indians are actually playing. So very nice of you to take some time to deflect a little bit of your attention into our direction.
If I suddenly start cursing, you'll know something has gone wrong.
I actually won't, because that's pretty in line with normal podcast.
So we got the season started here. You haven't seen much yet, but before we talk about anything that actually happened, I wanted to get into a little bit what the AL Central is going to look like and what your expectations are for both the Indians and the White Sox getting started here.
The entire American League and maybe the AL Central as much as any division feels really clustered together and competitive to me. I have a really hard time seeing the Twins winning the division this year. I don't think they have nearly enough pitching. But the other four teams I could see finishing in any order. I tend to be by nature a sports pessimist, or not by nature, maybe by nurture. Maybe it was watching the Indians lose the World Series twice as a teenager. I always expect things to go poorly. So I have a hard time. I certainly don't expect the Indians to win the division. But I think they've got at least as much talent as anyone in the division. Their starting pitching, I think, is the best in the Central, and we can get into that, I'm sure. You know, the White Sox, I don't know. I felt a little bit about them like I felt about the Padres last offseason, where they were making a lot of moves, and I felt like the moves were making them better. But I'm not totally sold on them having gotten enough better to make the jump, you know, up to, say, 90 wins. But I'm also open to the possibility that I'm going to be completely wrong about that. Their rotation strikes me as almost as good as the Indians. I think Chris Sale's probably the best pitcher in the division. So I expect, other than Minnesota, I expect the other four teams to be pretty closely bunched together.
Well, I certainly hope the White Sox season ends better than the Padres did last year. that went pretty poorly. I would agree with you, definitely, on kind of the clustering of talent. Outside of the Twins, again, because they were just, their pitching is questionable, and I think they're a bit young with the talent that they do have. But it turns out that Pecota seems to think that the Indians are a standout team in the Central. They actually currently have the Indians projected for 93 wins and the Sox in second with 83. What could possibly be driving that sort of distance?
That's really like a monster projection from Pecota, too.
Yeah, well, so the Indians 10 games ahead of anyone else and the Royals 10 games further back than Chicago. In terms of what's driving the projections, I don't know. I mean, I think obviously they love the starting pitching. You know, when you look into their projections, you can look at projected runs scored and runs allowed. And they have the Indians with the fewest runs allowed in the American League by a pretty comfortable margin. I think by, you know, like 30 to 40 runs fewer than any other team. So Pecota clearly buys into the Tribe pitching. I think the big surprise is Pecota also has the Indians projected to score the most runs in the division, not in the American League, but in the AL Central. And so I guess if you score the most runs and give up the fewest runs in your division, you're going to be projected to win it pretty comfortably. I'm not convinced the Indians will score the most runs. And I remember, you know, when I got my BP annual this year, looking through the Indians player projections, which is the first thing I do when I get it, and feeling like a little like, these are a little disappointing. So I was really surprised to go from looking at the individual player projections and feeling mildly disappointed in the hitting projections to then seeing that collectively that still projects them to score the most runs. We'll see. I don't expect 93 wins, and I'd be stunned if any team won the AL Central by 10 games this year.
Where would you expect that hitting to really come from? I mean, if you're looking at a bounce back from, I suppose Kipnis sort of did bounce back a little bit, but you're looking for Kipnis to have another good year there, and then Lindor, you're reaching for the stars with that, both offensively and defensively, do you think, for Lindor?
Yeah, and primarily defensively. When he came up last year, I think most Indians fans who had been waiting for him for years, which is a funny thing to say about a guy as young as he is. But from the second he was drafted, I think people were really excited about him. But I think he projected in a lot of people's minds sort of, you know, an Omar Vizquel, Ozzie Smith shortstop who's going to dazzle you with his defense and hit well enough, you know, to be a great player because of his glove. And sure enough, the defense looked great, but his bat was a lot better than I expected. I think we'll probably see some regression from him offensively, you know, closer to what was expected of him. But I still think he'll be an above average offensive player. And I think, you know, he's the kind of guy who can be, you know, one of the two or three best defensive shortstops in baseball for the next, you know, five, six, however many years. Kipnis, who you mentioned, did really bounce back last year, and we'll see if he can keep that up. In terms of the offense from the rest of the lineup, Yan Gomes 2 years ago was a great hitter. Last year got his legs taken out in a slide early in the season and it never really seemed like he was back to 100%. So I think potentially you see some rebound from him. Carlos Santana had his worst season last year, so I imagine the projections expect him to rebound some. Michael Brantley, who's on the DL right now, but shouldn't be out too long. You know, he's been one of the best hitters in the league the last couple of years. So there are a lot of, you know, I think potentially good hitters. And again, I have a hard time seeing them as a really good offense. But we'll see. Again, if you kind of, it's not that hard if you can look at the last 2 years and kind of cherry pick the better of the two seasons. There have been a lot of really good performances from the players in the Indians lineup.
Trajections kind of are seeing a lot of rebounds. Is there any spots you're particularly like you worried about that you're seeing like maybe this is too optimistic? There's a lot of fail potential that's maybe not being addressed here.
Well, I mean, I think anytime you're looking at a lot of rebounds, odds are not all of those rebounds will happen. You know, so between Gomes and Santana. Mike Napoli, who I guess would be considered the team's biggest offseason addition and is playing first base now, he's another guy you're looking at rebounding from a bad 2015. So the odds are not all of those guys are going to hit that well. The outfield, aside from Michael Brantley, is well below average offensively. You know, so you're going to have a couple, at least semi-weak spots in the lineup there. Third base, they signed Juan Uribe, who's got decent pop and, you know, is like a fine number seven hitter, but he's also pretty old. So, again, there's not, other than the offense in general, beyond Brantley, I don't have big concerns about anyone in particular. But between Gomes, Santana, and Napoli, I'm fully expecting, you know, one of them to not bounce back as much as I'd hope for and as much as the projections might be forecasting.
I don't really want to rail on the guy because I like him a lot. And actually, he just hit a home run, I think, like 15 minutes ago. But Carlos Santana, more than a bounce back, hasn't he kind of been trending down each year?
You know, I don't really think he has. I think the big difference when you look at his 2013 and his 2014, his batting average on balls in play dropped a lot. And so, of course, you know, his other numbers didn't look as impressive. But in 2014, his on-base percentage was .365, down from .377. But his walk rate was actually up. His power numbers, 2014, was he hit 27 home runs, which was up from 2013. I think his overall offense was pretty static between 2011 and 2014, other than the batting average and on balls in play making things look a little different. His batting average dropped a lot, his overall batting average in 2014, but his walk rate was up, his on-base percentage was almost identical. So I don't think he was actually trending downward much. Not that batting average and balls in play is completely luck, but some of it is, and I think enough of his production, it was close enough. If he was trending downward in 2014, I think it was a really, really small dip, whereas last year was a much, much bigger dip.
There's also, I suppose, allowances that could be made for. He hasn't had much consistency in knowing what his role was going to be.
Yeah, when Yan Gomes joined the team in 2014 and kind of, you know, took over as the main catcher, you know, Santana got pushed out of that role. He didn't want a DH. He wanted to be in the field. He offered to try to play third base, which at that point was sort of a question mark. He went down and played in winter ball in the Dominican to try to get back to third base. And they let him do that for a while, and that didn't work very well. And he was still backup catcher for a little while and playing third. So like you said, he didn't have like a really set role. Last year, by the end of the year, he did have a set role, and it didn't seem to help. But he's been moved into – he'll play first base some, but primarily DHing, and he hasn't complained about that. Like you said, he homered today, and I really like Santana, and he gets – beaten on by Indians fans. I've joked around that my obituary is going to include the amount of time I spent defending Carlos Santana over the years, even in his good years. People just, the average baseball fan doesn't get that excited about walks. And Santana has an elite walk rate, the most walks of any player in the American League the last 5 years. But Indians fans, even when he was having a good season, we're always pretty down on him for not hitting, you know, 30, 35 home runs. So I'd really, if one guy does bounce back, Santana's the one I want it to be because I've spent a lot of energy defending him.
I was about to say, like, how is a life, an offense that's built around like a 245 hitter? I bet like people, columnists freak out about that all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, his on-base percentage has been really good and he's got good but not great power. You know, as a catcher, his offensive profile was great. As a first baseman, you know, it went before last year. He would have projected as a pretty good offensive first baseman, but not a great one. But certainly if he's going to be a first baseman and now a DH, he needs his offense to rebound in order for him to be, you know, a valuable player.
The team in years past has had a reputation as being pretty walk heavy, and I know he drives a lot of that. But overall, I think it's a pretty patient team. Is that the case again going into 2016?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Santana drives that. Mike Napoli, who they added, will add to that because he, in a lot of ways, has a really similar profile to Santana, a really low batting average, a good walk rate, not as good as Santana's, and pretty good power. The rest of the lineup, Michael Brantley doesn't walk a ton, although his walk rate went up last year, but Michael Brantley does not strike out. His swing and miss rate is incredibly low. So he's... you know, a pretty different player, more aggressive. Jason Kipnis, you know, probably the team's best overall player last year, you know, kind of in the middle there. They don't have a ton of free swingers. Even Brantley, who I said, you know, doesn't have a big walk rate, you know, it's a decent walk rate. And then with his contact rate, he can kind of make up for that some. Overall, yeah, still, I would say certainly more on the patient side of things as a team profile offensively.
I was just curious, like, the Brantley, like, I always heard that he was going to be good, that he was going to, like, and he, like, hit solid average, like, throughout 2012, 2013. Was, like, this level of breakout what you guys were expecting from him when he was coming up? Because, like, it floored me, the guy he became in 2014.
No, I don't think anyone but Michael Brantley's mom expected him to become as good a player as he's been the last couple of years. He was... background for you guys or anyone listening who doesn't know, he was sort of the throw-in on the CC Sabathia trade way back in 2008. The Indians were dealing Sabathia because they were going to lose him as a free agent. They sent him to the Brewers, and Matt Laporta was the big marquee prospect they got back, and he did not pan out and become a good player. And Brantley was the secondary player. And so I think when they got him, it was this sort of, if he can become, you know, like an average MLB outfielder, that would be a great outcome for him. And, you know, going back to about 2011, which was his first full season, he was basically a league average outfielder. In the next couple of years, 2012, 2013, like you said, you know, like a solid player, someone every contending team is going to have a couple guys like that in the lineup. And I was really happy with that outcome. And then in 2014, suddenly everything just fell together. His batting average went up 40 some points in large part. You know, he was just making better contact. He hit a ton of doubles that year. His power spiked. His walk rate went up. Everything suddenly just popped way up. And, you know, last year, a little dip, you know, back down, but still a really, really good player. But again, I don't think anyone thought he was a guy that was going to get, you know, 60 plus extra base hits a year. You know, batting 320. He's been an incredibly pleasant surprise.
So surrounding Brantley and actually even waiting for Brantley, the rest of that outfield, is that, are you worried about that? Does that scare you at all? Does that, I mean, it seems bothersome to me if I was in your shoes.
Yeah, it's certainly the area of concern on the team. The starting rotation is really exciting. The bullpen, to me, isn't really exciting, but isn't really concerning. The infield, I feel good about. But yeah, the outfield beyond Brantley, you know, coming into spring training, the expectation was that Lonnie Chisenhall would be playing right field. And then center field was sort of up in the air. Abraham Almonte was sort of the favorite. They picked him up last year, and he played, I think, a little above his head, but played well the last couple months of the season. And then he got suspended for 80 games for a for failing a drug test. And so that threw kind of things in the air. And they were looking at guys like, you know, Rajay Davis, who they signed, Colin Cowgill. They later added Marlon Byrd. And when those are guys potentially competing for a starting spot, that's definitely concerning. And now Chisenhall is on the DL, although he's supposed to be back after this weekend, so he shouldn't miss much time. But even Chisenhall, he was the team's third baseman for a while. He's been one of the streakiest hitters I can remember. And his defense at third base sort of gradually fell apart. He spent a lot of last year in the minors, and when they called him back up, it was as a right fielder. And he had never in the minors or the majors played in the outfield until about 3 weeks before they brought him back up. And then he played fantastic defense in right field. The advanced metrics loved him. And if you take what he did the last couple months of the season and sort of project it over a full season, you know, he would have been like a Fielding Bible Award winner. And I don't know. I don't know, like, how confident I am that that's legitimate. And his bat is still a really big question mark. You know, right field, you've got to be either the best defensive player at your position in baseball, or you've got to be an above-average hitter to be a good right fielder. And for his career, he hasn't been an average hitter. He's had stretches where he was a great hitter. But stretches where he was a terrible hitter. And if you look at his overall line, so even when Chisenhall comes back, right field is still a question mark. Tyler Naquin, who's a rookie, is going to be for now the everyday center fielder. And he was a first-round pick a few years ago but doesn't project as a star. So, yeah, beyond Brantley, that's definitely kind of the questionable area on the team. But again, teams tend not to have 9 good players in the lineup. And so I think every team has areas like that. And for the Indians, it's, you know, right field and center field. But if they get decent production from those spots and get the kind of production most people expect at the other positions, you know, I think offensively and defensively overall, it's a pretty good lineup. Not a great one, but a pretty good one.
If the Indians are, you know, in it, you know, deep into June and July, the front office is going to be looking, or is it going to be able to make like serious upgrades at the deadline in that area?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on how you define serious upgrades. I think they'll be willing to take on payroll. I think they understand that they've got a pretty tenuous relationship with their fan base as it is. If the team's in contention, I think the front office will get the green light to add some payroll. I don't think, you know, they're going to take on $15 million in payroll, but I think they can go out and make a more modest addition. This offseason, it sort of felt like signing a lot of lottery tickets in hopes that if you sign enough of them, one of them's going to pay off, which is probably not my favorite strategy, but for a team with their revenue, it's not the worst strategy. But yeah, I think if July rolls around and they're legitimately contending and one of those outfield spots is still a glaring weakness, I think the front office will be allowed to try to make an addition and, you know, potentially to trade a decent prospect, which usually the Indians are not in a position to do because they need those guys to develop. But I think this year we could see that.
With that being the case, do you think there is a kind of set timeline for expectancy? I know the White Sox keep hearing about their 2-3 year window of winning. Is that something that the Indians need to worry about and try to strike during?
To the extent that they have a window, I feel like the window should be open for a while. Their pitchers are all under contract for at least like another 4 years. So they're much more likely to have pitching problems because of, you know, injuries or ineffectiveness than because of departures. So if guys keep pitching the way they have been, the rotation should be a strength for a while. And most of the good position players, you know, Lindor's obviously not going anywhere for a while. Kipnis, Brantley, Gomes are all under contract for at least another 3 years after this. Or Brantley maybe only 2 years after this. And then their top prospects are both outfielders. I think one of the reasons, even, you know, instead of kind of one bigger signing, they made a kind of a handful of smaller ones. I think they were, you know, they didn't want to splurge on someone big. I think they feel like by 2017, Bradley Zimmer and Clint Frazier, who are the team's top two prospects, at least one of them might be ready. So the biggest weakness in the lineup right now is potentially going to get filled by a prospect in another year. So I think the window could be open for a while. And so I think part of the reason they didn't make like a huge push for 2016 is they already felt pretty good about the roster, and they feel like they don't need to be desperate right now because, you know, there's no reason they can't be contenders for the next 3 or 4 years. I also think one of the really nice things for the Indians and for the White Sox right now is the division doesn't have a juggernaut. And I know that's a weird thing to say about the division that has the defending World Series champions. But even if you buy into the Royals, they're not like a team you expect that, oh, you know, no one else is going to be able to win that division for a while. And the Tigers were that sort of team. You know, for a few years, but they've gotten so old, it feels like they're barely holding it together. And at some point, the bottom, I mean, I guess last year, the bottom already fell out, and we'll see if they can get it back together or not. But I think the Indians and White Sox are in the enviable position of not having, you know, the Cubs in their division or, you know, the Yankees and Red Sox who can spend so much more money. It's a good division for a team trying to get its act together.
Yeah, I mean, that's, we're kind of clinging to that on our end with the team we have constructed, which looks like it could be decent but not great, and just the fact that there's no one that can smash them in the standings is encouraging, which unfortunately has been the source of hope in, I don't know, most of the years that we've had any hope going into the season, but it's better than, yeah, having that team you have to look up to, and I'm definitely not a buyer of the Royals. I don't think any of us are.
If they are still the Royals, I think that is bordering on the juggernaut team you talk about. I have no, like, they're built on, like, the most unsustainable foundation ever. So it could, like, there's really any year that could just be pretty much done. But if they are who they are still, then, yeah, they're probably the favorites.
I'd like to point at the pitching rotation and just say, see, no chance. But, I mean, that's the same thing I wanted to do last year, and they did what they did.
Last so 3 years.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, and like, and honestly, and again, this comes back to my sort of my pessimism about things. You know, the projections came out, and I think it was Sam Miller who wrote about Pakoda like the day after it came out of like, oh my gosh, the Royals again. And yeah, like I tend to be strongly drawn towards what the projections are saying. And if the Royals weren't in the Indians division, and if I hadn't last year grown to really, really dislike the Royals, which I never expected to happen, I'm sure I would feel differently and I would be like, no. But I'm like getting, you know, I'm having a harder and harder time with the projections for the Royals, you know, with and I even understand that like there are going to be teams that are outliers consecutive seasons. Like that's going to happen. But because they're beating the Indians, I have a harder time just pushing that aside and instead, and I'm like, and buying into the idea that the Royals have some sort of black magic.
I feel like, especially with the Sox and Indians, those are two teams that have like really built their franchises in a typical way, which is like they have like built a core that's based around really great young pitching. And so that seems like the way that you like get great value. And then the Royals come along and just go, haha, nope, and just win a World Series without nothing to speak of in that area. It's infuriating.
Yeah, you know, it is infuriating. And again, like, in 2014, it was like, it wasn't infuriating to me then because it was like, oh, well, you know, they're not the Tigers and good for them. They're fans and that, yada. And then I don't know, by like mid-April last year, I was like, oh, I really don't like the Royals. To the point where I was thinking about them playing the Yankees in the postseason last year and being like, I don't know, maybe I cheer for the Yankees, which I don't want to imagine a world where I'm cheering for the Yankees, but man, I really don't like the Royals.
Those plucky Bronx Bombers.
So with that strong pitching that Cleveland has, I mean, it's extremely strong up front, and would you be willing to say that Trevor Bauer being moved to the bullpen, I mean, yesterday aside, is saying more about their riches at the position or less about how Bauer has just kind of lost it?
I think probably a mix of the two. I was really caught off guard by the news. All through spring training, beat writers, you know, were saying, you know, the fifth spot is what's up for grabs. And Bauer got moved into the bullpen last year. So on some level, this is just a continuation of where things were at the end of 2015. But that always seemed temporary. And everything that was coming out of camp during spring training felt like, you know, there are four pitchers in the rotation, and then Josh Tomlin and Cody Anderson and TJ House were the guys thought to be competing for the fifth spot. Cody Anderson added something like 4 or 5 miles an hour to his fastball over the offseason, which completely changes the kind of pitcher he could be. He had a really good ERA last year, like something like 3.06 or something like that as a rookie, which is, of course, fantastic. But then you looked at all of his peripherals and his strikeout rate was like 4.3 per nine innings or something like that. Just something that, like, Mark Burley's the only pitcher in the last, you know, 20 years with that kind of strikeout rate who's been a good pitcher consistently. And so it didn't feel at all sustainable. But if suddenly he's throwing that much harder, I can see why they were excited about him. I also think Bauer is just, he's different. And he's had that reputation for a while. I don't know if he is actually difficult to coach, but it certainly feels like he's a different sort of player to coach. He has a lot of his own routines. And I think he works really, really hard. And I think he's really interested in being a good pitcher, but I think he has so many of his own ideas that Mickey Callaway, the pitching coach, and Francona, the manager, both in the last year or two have had quotes that are just kind of weird quotes to hear about a player where it's like they're not being critical because coaches and managers are almost never critical of their players publicly, but it's just not the normal kind of thing you hear them saying. It's a lot of like, When he figures out that we're here to help him, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, yeah, it just feels like they were sort of frustrated with him. But he pitched really well in spring, too. And his walks were way down, although they were down last spring. So maybe having gone through it before, they didn't care that his walks were down. It'll be interesting to see. You know, he gave up a bomb to David Ortiz on opening day. But, you know, if every pitcher who'd given up a bomb to David Ortiz over the years was finished, there wouldn't be many pitchers left. So it'll be interesting to see. I expect he's going to start at some point this season. You know, right now he looks like the number six starter, and every team uses their number six starter. But it's certainly something to watch. Josh Tomlin, who's the other sort of back of the rotation guy, is another guy who last year put up better numbers than he had before. So we'll see. I think the hope is that between Anderson, Tomlin, and Bauer, two of them can be good starting pitchers. And right now, they apparently think Bauer's the least likely to do it.
That's really too bad. I kind of like that Bauer is different. And especially with everything going on in the game today, with everyone talking about how, you know, you're supposed to do that, rules of the game, respect this and that. The fact that he does things different and then has nothing or not much to show for it kind of sucks.
Yeah, like on Twitter, he can come off as really, really frustrated. He tends to interact with people trolling him on Twitter, which I think is a terrible thing for any professional athlete to do. Mike Trout probably gets critical comments, and I feel like there's just no good reason to engage with them. And it's a lot of like, what have you done in your life responses and stuff. It's just like, oh man, like you've got to have better things to do with your Saturday night than sitting around responding to people who are being mean to you on Twitter. to me, it feels like he's frustrated that he does work and think about pitching so much, and he knows the results aren't what, you know, he wants them to be and what a lot of people expected them to be. He said something this spring about, you know, I can't remember the exact quote, but something along the lines of, I'm not even sure what kind of pitcher I want to be anymore. Right now, I just want to go out there and throw hard, which is sort of like a, oh, all right, well, I guess. And on that level, it's like, well, the bullpen is a better place for I just want to go out there and throw hard than the starting rotation. You know, so maybe he can turn into a good, you know, late inning guy and just go out there and throw hard for one or two innings instead of having to think about trying to go six or seven. I think he has too many pitches. He's at any given time seems to be working on like 8 or 9 pitches, and he'd probably be better off getting really good at 3 or 4 of them than throwing 8 or 9 of them. But he feels like someone who it's hard to convince him to do what he doesn't want to do. So we'll see. I really like, of course, to see him do well. And he's still really young. He's 24, maybe just turned 25 this winter. So he certainly got time to put it together. But we'll see.
I don't know if the comp would work on any other level, and I'm not even remembering the player. Wasn't there a pitcher somewhat recently that had – they basically just tasked him to cut down his pitches, and that was part of the issue that cleaned up his entire game?
I don't know. I can't think of anyone specific, but that definitely feels like a thing that does happen. These guys are trying to work on too many different things at once, and you know, so you sort of end up being at a bunch of things instead of being good at fewer. So I don't know. I don't know if there was someone in particular. I can't say anyone's jumping out at me either. But it does just feel like kind of like a typical adjustment you would make at some point. You know, you've got to. You see guys adding pitches too. You sort of add one pitch, but usually you're adding, you know, a fourth pitch, not trying to work on a ninth.
So the weekend series has, well, we would have had a Sale Kluber matchup that, unfortunately, since it was 29 degrees or whatever in Cleveland on Monday, that was ruined. And I think you're going to get Kluber pitching on Sunday. Is that how it's lining up right now?
Yeah, and he would have been on full rest for Saturday. They might have still held him back for Sunday and gone through all five guys the first time through anyway. But yeah, I think at this point it'll be Kluber on Sunday.
As far as the matchup is concerned, how do you think head-to-head-wise, anything that stands out between the two spots?
Well, like I said at the top, I think the Indians have the best starting rotation in the division, and I think the White Sox have the second best. You know, so there should be a lot of good pitching. You know, they'll be at kind of the back end of the rotations when the series starts. But Sale and Quintana will both be going for the White Sox, and the Indians, Anderson and Tomlin will both get their first starts, and then Kluber. You know, so both teams have really good pitching. I think, you know, that's kind of the obvious strength for both teams. I feel like, you know, the White Sox have tried to upgrade their lineup a lot, and the Indians, you know, made some smaller additions. You know, on paper, I'd expect lower scoring games. But, you know, Kluber did not look particularly sharp on opening day, and I'm sure the cold temperature didn't help. And I'm hoping, since I'm going to the game on Sunday, I'm hoping it's not 29 degrees then. But, yeah, I think for both teams this weekend and all season long, if the starting pitching is as good as it could be, they're going to be contending. And if the starting pitching, you know, drops off much, you know, they're going to have a much, much tougher road ahead of them.
Tomlin has like this absurd history against the Sox. Like he's a career 5.9 K per nine guy, though that's gone up a lot recently. But like he just waylays the Sox in terms of strikeouts. I'm trying to look it up real quick.
Yeah, I always wonder, you know, like anytime a guy has that kind of extreme split against one team, how much of it is just, you know, the sample isn't big enough. It's just kind of a fluke. And how much of it is, you know, for one reason or another, whether it's related to the stadium or just kind of a particular group of hitters he's going against, or pitchers. Ryan Rayburn, I'm sure you guys know, is a guy who just has destroyed the White Sox in his career and been like an MVP candidate type hitter against them. Yeah, I think, you know, Tomlin's overall strikeout rate jumped up a lot last year. But you're right. I pulled up his splits, and his numbers against the White Sox are a lot better. He's got 10 strikeouts per 9 innings against them compared to about 6 overall for his career. So you're absolutely right. And So if Josh Tomlin's striking you out and then you've got to face Corey Kluber, you're potentially looking at a whole lot of strikeouts.
Well, it'd be great if Tomlin's going Saturday and he can record more strikeouts than Sale.
How do you, Chris Sale, in growing up in Chicago, I've been to more games at Comiskey than any other stadium by far. And I've been for a long time now more drawn to pitching than hitting. So when I pick a game to go to, a lot of times the pitching matchup or the best possible pitcher is what I'll go to. So I love watching Chris Sale. And also am sort of always expecting him just to break down because he looks so violent out there. He's so tall and lanky. For you guys, do you have concerns about Sale, or at this point, has he been doing well long enough that you're not really worried about his body type looking so breakable?
For me, it's the latter. There's been enough time that's passed that he hasn't shown any indications. I mean, if things start dropping off, it doesn't worry me at all. I mean, I didn't know enough about mechanics, and I still don't at the front end to be too worried about it when everyone was talking about it. I mean, you could tell it looks funny, but once he was out there and throwing the full workload, I suppose in 2012 when he first decided he was going to throw 200 innings, I got a little concerned. But once that got under his belt and then another got under his belt and now another, I'm completely good with it. No worries.
He's had his share of little things, but he's always come out through them, like still back his old self and stronger than ever. I mean, he had periods in 2012 and 2013 where he lost velocity a bit and they rested him and he was fine. He went on the DL in 2014, he came back, and he was great. And, like, last year he broke his foot, but, you know, really had good arm health throughout the season, so he keeps enduring.
It's weird. I feel like he's underrated. I don't know if it's that the White Sox aren't a high-profile team, but I think, you know, he's been the last 5 years or 4 or 5 years, I think overall he's been the best pitcher in the American League and maybe hasn't – because he hasn't been the best pitcher in any one season, and you know he hasn't won a Cy Young, maybe that's it. But I feel like if you combine the numbers for the last 4 years or so since he became a starter, I don't think anyone's been better than him in the American League.
And I think part of that is the Sox just haven't been a premier team, and also watching games in Chicago, you got a year and a half head start because I feel like it wasn't until the 2013 All-Star game where he murdered everybody that stepped in the box. I think that was really kind of a national coming out party for him.
Yeah.
At least
what did he strike out? Like 270 guys or something last year? And, the White Sox couldn't help him, get a lot of shiny wins. But I don't know. I feel like he's like an overlooked superstar. I mean, Clayton Kershaw is the best pitcher in baseball, but Sale might be second best. And I feel like he doesn't come up in that conversation as much as he should.
Yeah, I think last year says a lot about it because you look at that stretch he went on with the strikeouts, and he was that dominant or close to that dominant pretty much the whole year. But the defense behind him was awful, so people will glance at his ERA and say, oh, it's pretty pedestrian. There's nothing amazing about that. And I think that kind of slows down some of the hype train that should be accompanying him everywhere.
Right.
So I know you haven't had much time yet with the season just starting, but I have to ask, has there anything been going on yet in the locker room that you've seen or heard about with Juan Uribe? Has he provided any fun stories yet?
No, I'm a little disappointed. I don't feel like we've gotten our first great Juan Uribe moment with the Indians. I'm sure it's coming, but I haven't heard much. He wasn't in camp for that much of spring training. He had some visa issues, so he was a little delayed in getting there, and then he went back for a while. So I don't have his
spring training. Weird he's having visa issues like his 15th year in the league or something.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
On some level, that's your first Juan Uribe. Because I had the exact same thought. Like, I can see someone's first time coming over, but once you've been in the league this year, like, if nothing else, you're a multimillionaire. Can't, like, your agent or some assistant make sure all that stuff's like... I agree. It's completely baffling that someone who's been in the league as long as he has would have visa issues. But, yeah, he had visa issues that not only delayed him, but caused him to have to go back for a while. So in terms of actual clubhouse stuff, he hasn't had that much time yet to give us a great Juan Uribe moment. But I know it's coming.
I totally missed the visa thing. I'm kind of blown away by it.
Yeah. Like, again, like, you know, some 17-year-old getting sent to, the Arizona Summer League for the first time, not surprising at all if they'd have a visa issue. But Juan Uribe has been to this dance quite a few times at this point.
That's been in the major since 01.
It's the strangest visa issue since Alexei Ramirez was not allowed to travel with the team to Toronto.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Are you guys missing him?
Well, not so far, considering Jimmy Rollins hit a go-ahead home run for the team yesterday.
And he's also really old, so he kind of seems like Alexei in a little bit.
I mean, Rollins is really only, like, what, 2 years older than Alexei?
Two or three, yeah. He's shorter, so just looks like Alexei got osteoporosis.
Yeah, I didn't quite realize. I mean, I guess I kind of knew, but I didn't watch him play enough. But I didn't realize until this season, or this spring more specifically, how small Jimmy Rollins really is.
He's listed at 5'8", so he's probably shorter.
Yeah, he's tiny.
Much shorter than me. I feel like anyone who's listed shorter than 6 feet is even shorter than they actually are listed.
All right, well, unless there's anything else we want to hit here, I guess we can close her up.
No, I mean, I don't have much else. Like I said, I think it'll be a really competitive race. I don't imagine all four teams will stay, you know, besides the twin clustered. But I really can't imagine anyone running away with it. So I think it'll be, just in terms of a compelling baseball narrative, a good division to follow this year.
Definitely looking forward to a fun ride of the season. All right, well, thank you again for taking the time out during the game. We'll let you get back and start watching that.
Sounds good. And, yeah, if you guys want to check in at any other point later on in the year, you know where to find me.
Absolutely. Take it easy.